Problem or problem for only one reason. That president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism? Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Owns its own self. Maybe it's the Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your president raises a question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And welcome to the February 27th, 2003 edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm your broad for this particular side, and my name is Robert Norris, and with me in the studio also is the outspoken, irascible, and occasionally unstoppable Jeffrey Gale. Hey, Jeffrey.
Good evening.
And we're going to be talking about a lot of different things. A lot of interviews from the street. Just got back from Borders, actually the corner of Pacific Avenue, where Borders meets the sidewalk at SoCal and Pacific, where a Downtown for All table has reappeared, and also a Stop the War Against the Poor, Stop the War Against Iraq table. And I'm beginning to sign up people. Actually, people are signing up, not many yet, but just began, for a vigil, an all-night, 24-hour vigil against the war in Iraq and against the war against the poor in Santa Cruz. That, of course, is always a problematic downtown. The whole set of downtown laws passed in 1994 and strengthened in 2002 and 2003 are deliberately designed to stop protests and demonstrations. But People were going pretty crazy with the chalk today. Jeffrey, you were down there. You got a kind of a quick glimpse of the tabling down at right in front of Borders. What was your impression?
I think it was wonderful. You know, Becky was thinking of playing hopscotch down there, and we had someone that wanted to chalk a mural down there. And, you know, I'm I'm hopeful that you can get the mayor of Santa Cruz, California, Mayor Emily, on board with your 24-hour protest. She's going to be reading her poetry next Tuesday night, Poets Against the War. Instead of heading up the city council meeting, we're all going to be in the Rio Theater next Tuesday night, March 4th. And, of course, that's the date that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was first inaugurated president of the United States, on March 4th, 1933, when he said, can I add, Robert, I think that's 70 years ago, he said, the only thing we have to fear in life is fear itself. March 4th, 1933.
We have moved from orange alert back to yellow alert, so I'm glad that that we are moving in the descending direction. On the other hand, Fuhrer President Bush has declared that, I guess, he is determined to have a peaceful post-bombing Iraq, and he's apparently there's been some dissension at the Security Council today. They kind of broke up in some alarm, according to America Online's ever-trusty news service. But regarding Emily Riley, our local Fuhrer, or mayor, if you will, the head of the Santa Cruz City Council, I, of course, watched her performance at the city council meeting on Tuesday night, when there actually were a number of substantive resolutions that were brought back. Let's put it this way. They were brought up by members of the audience, and then, of course, had been presented the week before at the Del Mar Town Hall meeting. You may remember, because I believe you were there, right, Jeffrey?
Yes, I was there.
In fact,
and
you tried to, you were, in large part, you kept trying to get it televised, tried to get it on the radio. You you did your best, but you failed, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I failed, and I wonder if Mayor Emily is going to get the cameras to come in side of the Rio Theater next Tuesday night. I don't know if they were in there to on Valentine's night to videotape the vagina monologues, but this is not going to be the vagina monologues. This is going to be the mayor and all these poets not raging against the war, Robert, but just, reading the poems.
Rhyming.
I don't think that's going to stop the war, though.
Rhyming against the war, yes.
Right.
Whose woods these are, whose missiles these are, I think I know. His house is in the D.C., though. actually, you know, I wouldn't mind a televised event of Poetry Against the War. That's fine. I don't know that Emily is preparing to do such a thing, or the community TV is planning to do such a thing. And the problem is, it so easily turns into a puffy occasion for Emily. But there has been, according to the Kennedy Report, which was an interesting part of the city council meeting on Tuesday night. I wish I had a copy of that for tape, because even though he did some rather shameful things after his report itself was kind of interesting. Actually, he did shameful things throughout the council meeting. The entire council, as I said, when presented with the substantive recommendations and demands of the community at the town hall meeting, chose to instead cower behind Representative Do-Nothing Sam Farr, who still cannot give us a straight answer on whether he favors ending depleted uranium weapons in terms of some substantive congressional action against that, or congressional action to end the bombing and the sanctions, or congressional action to local action to the community to apologize for his vote in favor of the biggest military appropriation in history, or even some local action by the city council is what I'm looking for. There were proposals by Sherry Connable, made a very impassioned speech urging that impeachment of President Bush, even though, again, Farr ducked that one. Oh, I can't do that. We don't control the House. We can't do anything. You can still introduce a resolution there, Sam. You know, you can. You are still more powerful than probably anybody in this county as far as your ability to have impact on the national scene as a congressional representative, because you are the congressional representative.
You mean Leon Panetta's flag is down?
I don't know.
The old Republican who became a Democrat?
I'm not sure what Leon has said about the war. He hasn't been in the papers much, but, I mean, he isn't the person who's supposedly representing us. Riley is supposed to represent us locally, and then regionally, Farr is supposed to represent us, and, of course, they're both misrepresenting us in terms of what seemed to me to be the pretty strong demands of the community that came to that town hall meeting. Unless Farr and Riley are claiming, and they didn't say this, that the general Santa Cruz community is not interested in the impeachment of Bush, that they are not interested in declaring Santa Cruz a sanctuary, that they're not interested in sending a delegation over to Iraq and Baghdad to either do weapons inspections themselves or monitor that peace process, or to be there in solidarity with those who want a suspension of the bombing in order to deter Bush's proposed preemptive war, which, by the way, now includes chemical weapons, so-called non-lethal agents in violation of the Geneva Conventions. I'm going to be reading about that on today's show. We're also going to be talking about Ed Rosenthal's case. You may remember Ed is the medical marijuana guy. You want to sum up what old Ed was about? Do you remember?
I'm going to talk a little bit in a few minutes, if I might, Robert, about yellow journalism. Yellow journalism right now is controlling our country because we had a journalist, broadcast journalist from Texas, that's George Bush's home state, by the name of Daniel Rather, who got this exclusive interview with Saddam Hussein, and at the same moment he got the interview, a journalist who is to the left of center, Mr. Phil Donahue, got fired, and he raged against the mighty who control the National Broadcasting Company and said that you are hiring Michael Savage to take my place. You're hiring right-wing conservatives to save this network. And this really I find frightening because it was the same Dan Rather the day of 9/11 who went on national television and said to President Bush, any way I can serve you, Mr. President, I'll do it. If it means killing Osama bin Laden, hey, but enlist me. Put me in there. Put me in there.
Well, I have liked Donahue's shows. I don't have a television. I haven't watched him in 20 years, but I have been able to go on the Internet to find transcripts of his shows, which contain a lot of very interesting debates between people who favor Bush's war policies and those who don't. And I think that it's really going to be a loss not to have a Donahue show on the air. We can talk about that more. But again, getting back to Rosenthal, and perhaps maybe I should begin the show with that, because I found this very interesting article on Counterpunch website. And Counterpunch website, again, is at counterpunch.com. It's a sort of an online newspaper, or I should say online opinion section, which gets new articles every day. The weekend, I think they wait a bit, but there's always something interesting and new, and it, of course, it's left of center, and of course it's only one particular perspective, but I think it's a lot of interesting articles there. Ed Rosenthal, as you remember, was the guy who was convicted for cultivating marijuana under official sanction from the Oakland City government. He was convicted by a federal court that refused to allow any mention of the fact that he'd been deputized by Oakland and refused to allow any mention of the fact that he was growing it for medical purposes for people who are suffering from life-debilitating, in some cases, life-ending illnesses. Anyway, this is a Counterpunch exclusive, February 26, 2003, and it reads as follows. Mistrial, Rosenthal jurors say they received outside legal advice, by Ann Harrison. San Francisco, lawyers for convicted medical marijuana grower Ed Rosenthal say he's entitled to a new trial because two jurors in the case received outside legal advice that compromised their ability to make an impartial judgment. Jurors Marnie Craig and Pamela Klarkowski have been subpoenaed by Rosenthal's attorneys, who today presented U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer with evidence of juror misconduct. Judge Breyer repeatedly admonished the jurors to judge the case according to federal law and consider only the evidence presented in court. But Craig has revealed that during the trial, she contacted a friend who is a practicing attorney. Craig believes that her decision to seek his advice was not proper because she revealed no details, was not improper, sorry, because she revealed no details about the case and asked a narrow question about a point of law. I simply asked him if I had to follow the judge's instructions or if I had any leeway at all for independent thought, said Craig in declaration. His answer was that I definitely did have to follow the judge's instructions, that there was absolutely nothing else that I could do. Craig said that her friend, whom she declined to name, further warned her that she could get into trouble if she strayed from the judge's instructions. She passed this information on to Clarkowski, who said in her declaration that the two women had discussed whether past cases challenged the law. Craig and Clarkowski later voted with their fellow jurors to convict Rosenthal on 3 federal counts of marijuana cultivation and conspiracy. Rosenthal remains free on a $200,000 cash bond, but faces a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years in federal prison, where he is sentenced in June, when he is sentenced in June. In order for a new trial to be warranted, we simply have to show that there is a reasonable possibility that the independent judgment or freedom of action of one or more of the jurors was affected in some way, said Rosenthal attorney Joe Elford. We have met that standard because Marnie Craig was given advice which suggested what we consider to be erroneous legal advice, which suggested she would get into trouble if she refused to convict. The defense team has until March 14th to present a motion for a new trial. But when Rosenthal's attorneys alerted Judge Breyer of potential juror misconduct on February 20th, he gave the defense just 3 business days to produce evidence of impropriety and reasons for requesting hearing to determine if the information warranted a new trial. Government prosecutors now have until March 5th to respond. The San Francisco U.S. Attorney's Office declined to comment on the potential impact of juror prejudice in the case, but the government must show beyond a reasonable doubt that the jurors are lying or that the extraneous influences or improper contact was harmless. That's quite a high standard to me. Craig confirms that the advice she received during the trial did affect her actions in the courtroom. She said that she was upset to discover after the verdict that she had the power to reject the judge's instructions and vote to acquit Rosenthal if she felt the law was unjust. She said she wished someone had told her about the right to jury nullification. Had I known that it existed, I think it would have given me the confidence to pursue other options, both in my own mind and in deliberations talking to other jurors, said Craig from her home in Novato, California. I think we might not have been able to come up with a unanimous verdict. I think it is entirely likely. Craig said she sought her friend's advice because while Rosenthal was accused of conspiring with a medical marijuana club, Judge Breyer forbade the issue of medical marijuana to be presented at trial. Craig said in her declaration that this left her feeling frustrated and confused. We don't condone what the jurors did, said Rosenthal attorney Bill Simpich, but at the same time we are deeply sympathetic that they are torn between conscience and duty, and in that vein we feel we have a right to a new trial given this unparalleled situation. Craig and Clarkowski were among the 7 jurors who later said they were misled when Judge Breyer blocked the defense from explaining that Rosenthal was growing medical cannabis under California's Compassionate Use Act, Proposition 215. Judge Breyer ruled that because all cannabis cultivation is illegal under federal law, Rosenthal's motivations for growing the marijuana were irrelevant. Jurors said they were outraged to discover after the trial that Rosenthal had been deputized by the city of Oakland, California, to grow medical cannabis for patients. During Rosenthal's trial, the attorneys filed a series of motions citing other grounds for a new trial. These included Judge Breyer's rejection of federal immunity provisions granted to Rosenthal and the judge's refusal to permit testimony from DEA supervisor Mike Heald. But Elford said the defense alerted Judge Breyer to the juror misconduct because they wanted to separate this argument from others. He expressed concern that Judge Breyer will decide the issue before the defense has an opportunity to fully brief it in their motions for a new trial. If Judge Breyer rules that the evidence of juror impropriety does not support a new trial, Elford says all defense motions will be presented to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. In the meantime, Elford said the defense has no scheduled reply or oral arguments to respond to the government's interpretation of the jurors' actions, but he says the defense will cite numerous cases in both the Ninth Circuit and the U.S. Supreme Court where outside influence on jurors overturned convictions and resulted in new trials. The jury misconduct issue is by far the strongest grounds for a new trial, said Elford. The other issues that have been raised have already been denied by the court. Ann Harrison is a freelance journalist in the Bay Area. She can be reached at ah@well.com. And this was in the Counterpunch online website. You have a thought on this, Jeffrey?
Well, yes. Of course, the key to this situation, in fact, number one, we want to praise Alexander Coburn. He and Noam Chomsky are the IF Stones of our time. That's Alex's newsletter. He lives in Northern California. There's absolute collusion here because Chucky Breyer way back when was the United States attorney recommended by Alan Cranston to President Carter over my best friend, Judge Daniel Henry Weinstein. And, of course, Chucky Breyer, there's double collusion here because his older brother, Stephen Breyer, is on the U.S. Supreme Court. So what this really means was that Chucky Breyer in no way was going to do anything to go against what his older brother had stated in the record in the U.S. Supreme Court. So again, Chucky Breyer is in cahoots with the U.S. attorney. He's in cahoots with the U.S. Supreme Court. Chucky Breyer would love someday to be on the U.S. Supreme Court. And right now in Washington, we have this filibuster going on with this Hispanic gentleman from Honduras who wants to be on the U.S. District Court of Appeals in Washington, which is at the same level as the court that Chucky Breyer serves on in Oakland, saying, well, I'm an Hispanic, I'm from Honduras, I'm a straight-A student, I was the editor of the Harvard Law Review, yes, I've never been a judge, and blah, 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 blah. So you are looking at a situation, once again, where the United States Supreme Court should be the law of the land, but because we have the right-wing conservatives on this court that we have, and the California State Supreme Court is farther to the right than the U.S. Supreme Court, so that just leaves the Ninth Circuit, and everyone is always coming to the Ninth Circuit, hopefully, you know, dealing with the death penalty, dealing with Daniel Gale, Jeffrey Gale, or whatever, the new movie. So bottom line is, We must elect a new president of the United States because the president has the power to stack all of these courts. And this president is illegal. He's a bastard. He is. He's illegitimate. He's not legally the president. And it infuriates me that on every level he is like King George because he's trying to stack the court the same way that Franklin Roosevelt tried and didn't succeed, even though Franklin Roosevelt was elected four consecutive times legally.
Well, Roosevelt tried to change the whole structure of the court and force judges who were over a certain age to retire and add new judges, and it was an actual, it was called, I guess, and then they did the switch in time that saved nine, as I remember. I find this a very interesting article. I've never heard this argument used, that jurors, because they got advice from an attorney, that they had to follow the judge's law and they believed it. It sounds like a desperate move to me, because what they're saying is that she's admitting she went to an outside attorney, so she acknowledges she was engaging in inappropriate behavior. This juror. And the reason she's confessing this is because she's so upset with the decision that she and the other jurors made, because they didn't know that Rosenthal was deputized by the Oakland City to cultivate cannabis for desperately ill people. Of course, the whole thing is incredibly obscene to even begin with. And the real question, of course, for all of us here is what's happening in Santa Cruz around medical marijuana in terms of our city council's refusal to allow reasonable zoning laws that would allow the cannabis pharmaceuticals and other clubs to operate here. Instead, we just have WHAM, which is waiting list is overfull, serves less than 300 people, and there's, 1,000 to 3,000 medical marijuana patients out there, according to attorney Kate Wells, looking for a place to go, looking for a legal source, and the city council's restrictive Rotkin Fitzmaurice laws of the year 2000, the summer of 2000, have put us in the situation we're in. And it's bad news. Looks like we have a caller on this issue. Let's see what we can do here. Hi, you're on the air with Free Radio.
Hi, this is Chelsea. Is this Robert?
Yes.
Hey, I just have the information about the March 5th actions at the university.
Oh, sign in, please.
Huh?
Who are we talking to?
Chelsea.
Hey. And you're with Standing United for Peace?
Absolutely.
And this is a group, I guess, that meets every Friday. Is it 6 or 7 o'clock up there?
7 p.m. at the Baytree Conference Center. Conference room D, that's above the Baytree Bookstore. Campus.
And are old, gray-haired non-students allowed in these meetings?
Mm-hmm. Anybody's welcome. This isn't just a student organization. Otherwise, it'd be Students United for Peace. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How long have you been with the group?
I've been with the group since, I'd say, October.
Huh.
Yeah. They just got started just in September, and they've just grown so huge since then. We have, like, 50 members at least who just come to meetings alone.
Well, you know, I was really impressed with the first mass rally you had, I guess, back in September or October. But it looked to me like the rallies have been getting smaller and smaller ever since.
That's exactly what I wanted to talk about here.
Yeah.
Our numbers, like, while nationwide, worldwide, numbers for the peace movement are just growing out of proportions, on campus our numbers are just shrinking. And it's really sad because, I mean, our student voice needs to be heard. I know there's a lot of students out there who are really against this war and really feel that it's wrong, but they don't come out. And we really need to get more people out there, from students and the community, you know?
Why is that, do you think?
Why are our numbers shrinking?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe students are just getting an anti-war overdrive. They don't realize the importance of the situation. I really don't know. Some organizations on campus want to blame themselves. Maybe we're not getting the word out, but that's what I'm here talking to you for, trying to get the word out.
Well, I know you're operating in a difficult situation because on campus there's only one legal place to assemble, right? And McHenry Library. I heard there were two places.
Yeah, there's also the Bay Tree Plaza. That's where this next Wednesday, March 5th, that's where we're going to be meeting then.
Tell me about that.
In front of the Bay Tree Bookstore.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be a rally there starting at noon. We're going to be there until, like, 3 p.m., though. There's going to be art, music, and food. There's just going to be all sorts of festivities and stuff, banners, posters, anything to have your voice be heard about you.
You going to march downtown, or are you?
Not for this one.
Uh-huh. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, we're just meeting there, and we're having a rally. And at 3:30, we're also going to Stevenson College on the Stevenson Knoll, and we're making human peace sign, like, as a symbolic donation of our feelings for peace around the world.
This is all Wednesday, March 5th.
Mm-hmm. Starting at noon.
Starting at noon at the Bay Tree, I guess, Plaza area?
Yeah, right in front of the Bay Tree Bookstore on the UCSC campus. Wednesday, March 5th, I just want to mention, isn't just a UCSC event. It's events nationwide that have been planned. But there's also another one. It's nonviolent action in front of the recruitment center on 41st. In Capitola. They're having a rally at noon. Everybody's welcome, even people who don't want to participate, but they're meeting there at noon, and
what is this, can't make it up
to the campus.
What day is this?
The same day.
So wait a minute. But
Wednesday, March 5th.
So they're going to be two different places where people are going to be meeting.
They're organized by two different groups.
It's too bad they don't do one on Tuesday and one on Wednesday, and then the same group could come to both, you know?
Of course, I
don't run things up there, and I'm sure things would be much better if I did, I'll tell you.
Yeah, these were organized by two independent groups on this other one. Let me see. I'm trying to see who it was organized by. I can't see who it was even organized by.
And what's... Oh, I see. These are two independent groups.
I think this one was maybe organized by the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Well, I mean, I'm glad that people are organizing these things. I just wish that, you know, that we had better communication. I know that I was at one SUP meeting, Standing United for Peace, which is, I guess, again, Friday at 7 o'clock on the third floor of the Bay Tree Convention Conference Center, in Room D, right? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah.
Room D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go down to Peace Friday, and people down there at Ocean and Water Street, which happens every Friday, used to be 5, now it's as early as 4, they don't even really know much about Standing United for Peace. I mean, there's very little communication. So,
yeah. Well, I go to Peace Fridays because I live just a block away from there.
Oh, well, that's easy enough.
A lot of students, it's not convenient for. I don't know, but there is actually a network of peace organizations that meets in Santa Cruz every other Sunday.
Huh.
Iraq Action Network. They've been getting a lot done. They're organizing emergency response actions and various other actions.
When is their next meeting?
Not this Sunday, but the next Sunday. I'm not sure the exact date that would be.
So that would be 3 days into the bombing of Baghdad? Sorry. Yeah, I'm just...
According to the most recent...
Yeah, well, actually, I know. They're talking about... he wants to kick off in mid-March or something. It's just hard to tell. With Turkey falling in line, I'm a little worried... Most of the time I'm mostly numb, but I occasionally get worried when I look at the news accounts, and I'm always, as you we met downtown, I guess, about, what, an hour ago,
mm-hmm.
and you noted the table, which was kind of joint theme, stop the war on the poor in Santa Cruz, stop the war in Iraq, and I told you I was trying to sign people up for a 24-hour vigil.
Yeah, and there was one other person who had signed the list.
Yeah, so the two of you are going to do, yeah, I guess you take the first 12 hours, and the other person takes the next 12, and I get to, of course, come in and give orders, right?
Sure.
Wow, so actually, if anybody out there...
I'll announce that to Standing United for Peace, and...
What's that?
I'll announce that to Standing United for Peace and any other...
Excellent, that's exactly what I was
that
hoping.
I talk to. Another thing, if the war does start anytime soon, Iraq Action Network and the people at the Nonviolence Resource Center are trying to get people to staff the resource center 24 hours for anybody who needs information
mm-hmm.
on actions that are going on.
And where is, what's the number for the Iraq?
Anybody who wants to participate in that, because a lot of we're having trouble finding people because a lot of people are going to marches in San Francisco. We really need people to go there and
what
volunteer.
Number can people call to volunteer?
That'd be the Nonviolence Resource Center.
Well, the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 423-1626, I think it is. I got to check on that because I don't. That's sort of off the cuff. But the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Yeah, that's it.
Huh. 423-1626. Jeffrey has a comment.
Yeah. Hi. Well, yesterday you had a protest at the lunch hour on the campus. I know there was some rain and stuff, but how many people showed up for that yesterday on Wednesday? I understand there was a flyer around town at UC Santa Cruz that you had some big protest meeting outside of the Bay Tree bookstore.
For yesterday?
Yesterday,
Wednesday?
Yes. At 12:15 yesterday.
From what I've been hearing, we've been organizing that on a weekly basis,
mm-hmm.
or attempting to. And this one on this following Wednesday is supposed to be a big event with music and food and stuff. But right now we're trying to get going every week on Wednesdays.
How do you think we could all work together to stop the war from starting? To me, as Robert knows, I believe that the key here is what each one of us can do to stop the war from starting, because once World War III, a nuclear war, starts, then in my opinion there's no way to stop it. I don't care whether you're going on spring break on March 14th or what, no one's going to be safe in the United States for one second if the war starts. I believe we will have violence. God forbid they'll knock down the Sears Tower in Chicago, the Golden Gate Bridge. No one's going to be safe. So my question to you is, what do you think each student can do now to stop the war from even starting?
First of all, come out to the rallies and stuff. Learn what you can do through that. Another very, very important thing is to call and to write letters. You know, the thing about students, though, exactly what you're saying. They got spring break coming up in March. You know, they don't realize the urgency of this situation.
Well, they will when all the airports,
yes.
Greyhound bus depots, and Amtrak is shut down, and they will not be able to go on spring break. Then they're going to know it, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Using their mommy and daddy's credit cards and the credit cards the bank send them, even if they don't ask for them, right?
Yeah. We do have a lot of students up at the campus. They were really passionate about this, put hours and hours every day into this movement, though.
How about professors? Where's Professor Michael Rotkin? How about your professors? Where are your so-called leftist professors, Angela Davis, Bettina Apfecker, Gina Dent, Michael Rotkin? Where are they? Why? I noticed there was a good piece by Professor Lipschutz in the paper today, but I want to know about your leftist radical professors. Why aren't they leading these peace marches, nationwide sit-down strikes, not paying their taxes? What are your professors doing on your campus?
Mm.
I don't know. We have tried to get at our last rally, which was last Friday, actually. We tried to get Angela Davis out there. We did have somebody trying to get Angela Davis out there.
What did Angela say?
She's a very, very busy woman.
A little too busy, huh? Yeah.
I wasn't the one who was organizing that. It was another...
She doesn't return her phone calls either, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think
so. We had the same problem getting Angela to oppose the sleeping ban or local laws, although I think on this issue, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, if you ask her if she's against the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like the Santa Cruz City Council. They're all against the war in Iraq, but as we found on Tuesday night, they don't want to take any substantive action, such as demanding, such as declaring the city a sanctuary for war resistors or sending a delegation to Iraq who would actually, you know, be present and so maybe serve as a deterrent to this kind of bombing. I know that, I mean, I was impressed that you, and I take it you're as busy a student as anybody, you were willing to sign up for a vigil that would, you know, involve some time at night when you, you know, might
should be studying for a final.
What's that?
Late at night is when I actually have time.
Well, that's great. And of course, you live downtown, so it makes it easier for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you going to, is it possible for you to take a sign-up list up there and ask people if they're willing to sign up for this?
Absolutely.
That would be great, because I don't know if I can make it up there tomorrow.
Is the table going to be set up downtown?
If it isn't set up downtown, my number is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833.
Yeah.
And a sign-up list, could just, all you need to do is make a piece of paper that says,
I'll just do that.
24-hour vigil, like you saw me do in my, rather makeshift list that you signed, and then just call me afterward. Isn't it great to be organizing on the air like this?
Yeah.
I see that my comrade here is pointing to a March 10th, 7:30, Stephen Nunes deal at the Kresge Town Hall, speaking on U.S. policy in the Middle East and Iraq, David Rovick singing, $5 to $10 sliding scale, sponsored by the Rascals. You know about that? That's happening. So actually, there
are so many events going on.
We have three events. Actually, that's a week from Monday. So we're talking about Emily Riley. You probably know if you've been listening to this. Is planning a no strong sanctuary declaration. No declaration of asking that FAR impeach Bush or that he declare against uranium depleted weapons or anything of that sort. But she will be reading poetry at the Rio Theater on Tuesday night. So.
This is a benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Oh, that's a good point.
March 10th?
Yeah, that's a good point. The point is also that this thing is, as well as being an interesting action against the war in the Kresge Town Hall, 7:30 on the 10th, is going to be also a benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Which, do you listen to Free Radio?
Me?
You.
No, not much. I don't listen to the radio much.
Well, you'd better listen more if you know what's good for you.
Absolutely.
So, again, give me your name again.
Chelsea.
Chelsea. I'm sorry, Chelsea. I'll pick it up eventually. Any other thoughts or upcoming events you want to acquaint us with, or any reflections on this tabling that you saw downtown today? You crossed the street to come over and check it out.
Well, yeah, I saw the chalkings, and I was like, oh, this is beautiful. I love it. It's
You mean the vandalism, the scribbling on the sidewalk, the defacing of our downtown sidewalk, you call that beautiful?
It was lovely. Absolutely lovely seeing people who go out there, risk arrest just to make a little peace sign on the sidewalk, you know? I mean, it's such a small sign of your feelings of peace, you know? But it's such a small thing.
I appreciate
people
that.
People are willing to risk that, though. It's beautiful.
I know that, I think that Becky Johnson, who's going to trial on March 14th for chalking, would, I think I want to put in a kind of a plug for her, because she's 10 o'clock on March 14th in Department 1. She goes to trial for chalking on the sidewalk from last summer. She's probably one of the only people that I know that's fighting this case in court.
Other
people
have
been. What's that?
Does she want people to come?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, if you can announce up there that she's going to trial for chalking on March 14th, that's Friday. I think it's Friday. Yeah, it looks
like. Right. Beware of the Ides of March, the 15th. The next day is going to be this huge anti-war rally in San Francisco, and we definitely want Becky to be able to come there, so we need to, you know, tell the judge, hey, you know, she's got important work to do on March 15th.
Well, but she is a criminal chalker. Let's not forget that. So, yeah, this is, let me give you the...
March 15th, or March 14th?
It's March 14th, Friday, Department 1, at 701 Ocean Street, which is the address of the county court building. And that'll be, again, 10 a.m., Department 1, Becky Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N. And for those who want more information, you can go on the web. You can actually go to Counterpunch. She has had an article printed on the website in Counterpunch, which is a great website, by the way, www.counterpunch.com. Or you can go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, which you may have been to. You know about that one?
Mm-hmm.
It's www.santacruz.indymedia, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A.org, for all you out there who haven't heard this, probably the regulars know about that.
Since we're throwing out email addresses.
What's that?
I gotta go pretty soon, but
yeah, go
I just
ahead.
Want to throw out Stand United for Peace email if you want any other information on this. www.antiwarnetwork.org/Santa Cruz.
It's www.antiwarnetwork.org/Santa Cruz.
Yep, that's our website.
Uh-huh. And is there a phone number people can call? Are there any organizers who are, you know, you can talk to?
No, we don't. We don't have a. We only have an email contact.
Mm-hmm.
But the, probably the best thing would be to go on the website because we don't really have any individual contacts.
Well, if you can announce those two things at the Standing United for Peace meeting tomorrow, which I remind our listeners is 7 o'clock at the third floor, room D of the Baytree Conference Building Center, that. A, Becky Johnson goes to draw for chalking, and B, if anybody wants to sign up for that vigil, if you can pass around a sign-up sheet with phone numbers and emails,
yeah.
I'll try to organize it. I mean, I've been talking about this for 4 months, and nobody has bit the line, but now we hooked you, and so we're so happy.
Yeah,
I think the peace vigil sounds like a great idea. I mean, to really get this movement going, to really blow it out of the water, to really get people to listen to us, we got to have a constant flow.
I like your cover. I like your cover story in City on a Hill Press that came out today, where we have we're raging against the mighty tonight, and these are raging grannies, an artistic revolution, creative resistance to war. We need to get those raging grannies to be in court that day to help our sister Becky.
Or even the raging granddaughters would be good too. You know. You should know that my interest is not just, as you saw from the table today, the war against stopping the war against Iraq. It's stopping the war on the poor in Santa Cruz, and that would be an equally hyped theme of my vigil. So I don't want to mislead people. We are against the war in Iraq, but we're also against the war against the poor in Santa Cruz. So
out there for freedom and peace in general.
Yeah. I mean, I would welcome, you know, but I wouldn't want people to be misled and thinking. Some people would say, well, you know, if you just want to let homeless people sleep outside at night, that may alienate some upper middle class supporters of the war against, who wants to oppose the war in Iraq. And I would say, well, sorry about that, but, you know, we are talking about, I think, a war, as you point out, justice, kind of a more universal standard here, but essentially looking for not just the right position on something that's happening 3,000 miles away, but something that's happening right downtown at the same time. So,
do you think your fellow students, instead of going to Cancun on spring break or Maui, that all students in the United States on spring break could get together and, shall we say, have a nationwide sit-down strike, surround the Pentagon, shut the Pentagon down, shut the White House down, shut the State Department down, shut the CIA down, shut the FBI down? Do you think that we could get all of the students in the United States to forego spring break and make sure that we don't go to war? Shut the government down. The government can't go to war.
That would be one of the most incredible things that we could ever organize.
Jeffrey's going to go up on...
As far as spring break goes,
yeah.
Not all schools have the same spring break, particularly UC Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Got a totally different spring break than everybody else. And there is an organizing right when our spring break starts at UCSC, March 22nd. We're not trying to organize around it for SUP just because just like you're saying, you know, we're not going to get a turnout. But, yeah, we're going to try and get just local youth in general involved in this. We're working with the...
Well, Jeffrey is going to hike up to campus tomorrow to demand the Standing United for Peace block all students from leaving the campus. So we expect you to have your vehicle ready to barricade the campus there as spring break approaches.
You seem really into the student movement, getting students involved, and I really hope that maybe you can come to our meeting tomorrow, maybe just go check it out.
Hey, hopefully one of us will, and I appreciate your offering to kind of circulate a list, and I'll be getting back to you. Maybe we can, you know, I'm going to be doing some vigiling myself, probably regardless of what anybody does. So maybe, you know, I can get you to come around with a cup of coffee, and we can, you know, do it together.
Yeah.
But Robert, Ralph Nader, and yours truly, we don't have automobiles, you know, so we can't come up by auto, but we can take the bus up there, definitely.
Hey, I got the sticker mobile, man. Hey, listen, thank you for calling in. You can talk some more if you want, but I know you said you had to go.
I got to go. Thank you for letting me know.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. You're on the air with Jeffrey Gale and Robert Norris in Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We were talking with a member of Standing United for Peace. And thank you very much for calling in. I'm going to call you, and we're going to hopefully maybe get up to campus. Jeffrey, maybe we can get you up to campus tomorrow and get some action around that. Again, she will be at the Peace Friday, which again happens tomorrow at 4 or 5 o'clock at Ocean and Water Streets, and people are invited to come to that. I think we're going to take a breather now with a little, some street interviews. This is from a couple days ago, and we have, unfortunately, a machine that will probably give us is the number to call. 427-4523 is the number to call. And you can always, of course, come to the benefit on March 10th and donate a couple hundred bucks. 7:30 p.m., Kresge Town Hall, Nunes and Rovix. A singer and a very articulate speaker, a benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz, sponsored by the UCSC Rascals. And if you want to give us some stuff before then, again, 427-4523 is the Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail. It's also the number to call if you're interested in becoming a programmer on the air, 427-4523. Or if you're interested in making offers to the collective about, for example, assisting in the advertising that they will then choose to ignore. Sorry about that. I just had to kick that one in there. Jeffrey here was attempting to get the Free Radio Santa Cruz schedule into the Sentinel, and I couldn't get a peep out of the Free Radio Santa Cruz collective. But, hey, that's how it goes.
Well, Robert, maybe the mayor, you know, can make it so that this great radio station can put the city council meeting on live every other Tuesday night. I think, crucially important that it not just be on television. It should be live on the radio. There are many people in Santa Cruz County that are driving to and from work or whatever, and they need to be able to hear this on the radio here in the city of Santa Cruz. So maybe the mayor, you know, Senator Clinton, when she was first lady, some people said she should stay home and bake cookies, but we need not to have half-baked ideas. We definitely would appreciate it if this mayor of Santa Cruz, California, I called her this week, great article about her bakery and her partner, but we need the city council meetings live on the radio, even if the city council has to put up a few bucks to make sure it's live on the radio every single city council meeting.
Now, if you want to get Riley's opinion on that, or if you want to express your own, you can give her a call right now, even as we speak, 420-5022. 420-5022 is the number of Mayor Emily Riley. Riley has become notorious. I call her Smiley Riley. She's a mayor who smiles at you and nods as you speak. At least this is my general impression as you watch her on the in the city council meetings. But she continues to support anti-homeless laws, has for her last 2 years, supports secret processes at the city council that, for example, short-circuit any kind of real public input. Hence, the meetings of her ad hoc financial advisory committee, which is the committee that killed the Citizens Police Review Board and is supposed to be creating a substitute body which oversees the police, was completely closed to the public. Nobody had any knowledge it was happening. I called the city council to ask for information. I got no information about it until she told me about it afterward. She gave no meaningful report about what they discussed. It is all happening behind closed doors. That's bad. That's wrong. The number to call to put a little pressure on this city official who has paid taxpayer money to be mayor, not a lot, but some, and she, more important, she has the power, and she represents us before the world, 420-5022. And most important, her laws make 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people at night, illegal, for doing what each of us has to do.
And the Metro Bus Company announced today that there will be no buses to the homeless shelter as soon as rainy season's over. I saw that in the paper today, Robert.
Yeah, makes it illegal for people to sleep. That was what I was going to say, and it's true. Looks like we've got a caller coming in here, and that's interesting to hear, Jeffrey. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Mr. North.
Yes.
How are you?
Oh, ho. This sounds like a distant caller. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, well, Benito is the name.
Oh, Benito. Okay, Benito.
Yes. Perhaps a familiar name. I'm calling, as you surmise, from some distance, and was most interested in the comments of your guest, Jeff. Is that his name?
Jeffrey.
About this, yes, Jeffrey. Sorry. About this marijuana case. Of course, where I currently live in Europe, that's not much of an issue.
You're actually calling from
a different legal system here, but
Benito, you're calling from Germany?
I'm calling from Germany, Mr. North.
What are the rules regarding medical marijuana use in Germany? Can you acquaint us?
Well, I don't think that this is so much of an issue in Germany as it is in the States, primarily because the use of marijuana, even recreational use, if you will, is really not much of a problem here. So I think technically speaking, and I don't know the amounts, that it still is against the law.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a strong movement afoot to decriminalize
mm-hmm.
The use of marijuana here. But since the enforcement is extremely lax, as I say, it doesn't seem to be quite as much of an issue here.
Well, I know that, you know, in Amsterdam, we actually know that there are...
Oh, sure.
It's a little different. You can actually go and, you know, smoke hashish or have hashish cookies or,
yeah, or
in cafes.
Or other types of drugs as well.
Right, although I think it's mostly, I think it's cannabis. And I guess there are some, in Switzerland, I guess there was some talk about, what do they call them, not shooting galleries, injection rooms and inhalation rooms where you can actually legally go to shoot.
Well, that was in response because for a period of time, Zurich, in addition to Amsterdam, was one of the main centers of drug use, and the situation
mm-hmm.
around the major train station became rather awkward there, and so they felt that something needed to be done. But I think you'll find in almost all major European countries, I don't know what the situation is in the UK, that pursuing marijuana smokers is one of the least important priorities, you know, among the police and certainly the courts. I was actually more interested in the comments of your caller
mm-hmm.
about students and the reaction to the war. I suspect that there are a few European countries where the citizens are more up to date on what's happening in the war than is the case in Germany. For example, just before calling you, I was seeing on the late news the report of Dan Rather and his interview of Mr. Hussein. In fact, I was curious about what the reaction was in the States. What I've heard on the German television is, in response to that, or perhaps more in response to the apparent tactics of the regime in Iraq to agree to destroying, you know, the slightly longer-range missiles that
did they agree to do that?
Polls in the U.S. apparently now show a diminishing of support in the U.S. for, you know, an extreme hardline position. In other words, if, in fact, although this may not be material, Iraq does agree to have the missiles destroyed, then support of the war in the States is perhaps slightly less. However, having said that, I think most people here are rather cynical about it and feel that, you know, que sera, sera, that Mr. Bush will do whatever he wants to. And so, as well-meaning as the efforts are to have, you know, a mass protest of students, A, I don't think it will come to that, and B, I don't think even if there is, that it will have much of an impact.
Right. Well, Jeffrey is a man who watches a lot more television than I do. He's my co-host here today on the show. Jeffrey, has there been any reaction? Again, what we're talking about, reaction, what exactly, caller, was the specific reaction to what?
Well, to the announcement, apparently, I presume that the U.S. Media have reported as well, but it is now, and I don't know if this is an authoritative report or not, but what we hear on German television is that now Saddam has agreed to, you know, Mr. Blix's demand.
Oh, really?
That, you know, those missiles be destroyed. That seemed to be the most important factor.
Oh, well, I have you heard any reaction to this yet, Jeffrey?
Well, number one, there was a big brouhaha dealing with the fact that the CBS National Television Network allowed Dan Rather to even interview Saddam Hussein. Dan had interviewed him in 1990, and the president's press secretary, Ari Fleischer, they were furious in the White House, the West Wing of the White House, because they wanted someone in the White House to be able to actually come on immediately and refute what went on in the interview, just showing you how Big Brother, the media's they want to control the media totally. And of course, it wasn't a coincidence that the President of the United States last night in prime time took 27 minutes to take over the networks to make a speech about Iraq, knowing that CBS had been able to scoop the rest of the media with the interview that Dan Rather put on. So the bottom line, I think what's going on here is a lot of posturing, and if you carefully read a transcript of President Bush's 27-minute statement to the nation last night, there's no doubt in my mind that he basically has made up his mind that we're going to use military force, which I think will make him a one-term president just like his father. I think that's the stupidest thing that he can do,
use
military force.
I would agree with you on that, Jeff. I think, you know, whatever you know, scenario emerges, certainly one is that, you know, the peace after the war will be a lot worse. I mean, can you imagine the difficulty of trying to, run Iraq through, you know, imposing a U.S. General Alan MacArthur on Iraq? I think Bush, and this is the most surprising thing for someone who is alleged to be politically astute, is that he's committing political suicide with this. Whatever happens, I think, you know, he's history.
And our economy will get 50, 80 times worse if we fire even one shot. Again, I keep repeating, Seymour Melman's the expert from Hofstra University. He clearly states in his book that during World War I and World War II, that created more jobs and more work for everyone. But if you carefully study the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and the Gulf War, the economy went in the tank as a result of those three wars. So right now we're in an economic depression here in California. We have more than 1 million homeless, more than 8 million in the United States. So if Bush is stupid enough, and Colin Powell, if they're stupid enough to even fire one shot, we will have an instant replay, in my opinion, of the great Wall Street crash of 1929, and we'll have another Hooverville, etc.
I do agree with you that the potential for the oil price to go through the roof, when it's already quite high, is substantial, and that, I think, will have quite an impact. I mean, certainly in Europe, where, of course, gasoline prices are much higher because we're a little more ecologically minded here. I'm going to have to push off. I just wanted to say to Mr. Norse, I was listening in on Sunday, and he had a very weird caller, some Brit who pretended to be a member of the aristocracy or something. I think it may be the second coming of Screaming Lord Hutch. I don't know.
I remember that fascist
calling in. This gentleman is... sounds very dangerous, Mr. Norse.
I called up Governor Ridge, and I
lunatics like this are around. Yes, absolutely. I think you're
the
well,
White House
well
lines
advised.
Have been busy, so I've been unable to reach him. I understand, actually, there was what they call a virtual call-in yesterday, where they tried to tie up the lines to across the country to the White House. And in answer to your question, caller, I know you got to go, and you're calling long distance. I was very dismayed that Saddam Hussein did this bullshit for the last week about, I don't know if I'm going to destroy these missiles or not. I suspect that having now said he's going to, maybe he did this suspense ploy where he held off for 5 days. I think I predict it's going to result in even more and even stronger anti-war sentiment in the U.S. From what little I know.
No doubt. I mean, if you saw his, and I was able to see most of his interview with Dan Rather on German television. As I say, you know, you see these things almost as quickly as you do in the U.S., if not more so. A very interesting man. I mean, some of the comparisons with Hitler, and I think one has to be a little careful there because they're two very different personalities. But this is a man who's quite effective in interview. And I mean, of course, his ploy about debating the president, I mean, there's no question, getting back to Jeffrey's comments, that this will not take place. But in a sense, I mean, it's sort of, you know, up yours, Mr. Bush. I think, personally, this is now a mutual vendetta between the two. I feel, actually, that Bush's hatred of Hussein for, you know, what he indirectly or directly did to his father is really one of the key motivating points here. I'm surprised that more hasn't been made of that. But
well, I think, caller, it's very cowardly that the President of the United States refuses to meet with Saddam Hussein. The Pope recently met with Saddam Hussein. Dan Rather, a journalist trained in Texas, just met with Saddam Hussein. How come the President of the United States...
The proposal by Hussein was simply that they debate, you know, via satellite. I mean, you know, he could sit in the Oval Office and do that.
Well, how come the President of the United States is such a coward that he won't have a face-to-face meeting with Saddam Hussein when he meets with terrorists like Ariel Sharon every month?
Well, you know, the reality is like every other politician, it's the same reason that Emily Riley, the mayor of Santa Cruz, will not come to Free Radio Santa Cruz and engage in a debate on the anti-homeless laws. Because I think, frankly, they're not too confident that they would win, and they don't want to risk, you know, losing face in front of their political...
I'm off. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, thank you very much, caller.
Yeah, goodbye.
Good to hear you. And, hey, that was a caller from Germany, actually, and I want to thank that caller for, A, listening in, and you can listen in, too. You don't have to be within a mile of the station, as you do to get the direct signal, maybe a couple miles, actually. We're at 96.3 FM. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, or you may be listening to us on the Internet at freeradio. I'm losing my mind here. Boy, I've got the Indie Media website on my mind, and I'm forgetting the Free Radio website. But the Free Radio website is I better whip out my wallet, and I'll try to remember. Age does this to you as you get older. Actually, it is microradio.net/FRSC, www.microradio.net. And that is, we go out over the whole world. So check us out, and give us a call, 831. You can call from Iraq. Let's come on now, Saddam. Give us a quick call, 831-427-3772. So that's the easy number to call. If you're local, it's 427-3772.
And, of course, Robert, we don't want people to confuse Free Radio Santa Cruz with Radio Free Berlin or Radio Free Berkeley.
Certainly not.
Does such a thing still exist as Radio Free Berkeley?
It's actually... Liberation Radio Berkeley, I believe. And I heard today that the station, though it does exist now, is after they were raided by the FCC, the first big raid on the West Coast, I guess, that I've heard about. They are now kind of broadcasting with a weaker signal and worse equipment, but they are back. They came back within days after they were taken off the air. And Free Radio Santa Cruz, though we're not on really kind of yellow alert or orange alert or pink alert, we're on polka dot alert, and we can use your funding, you know, 427-4523. I'm not going to do the KPFA, KUSB marathon thing, but, you know, we could use money, we can use help, we can use support, we can use equipment, whatever you got. I'm going to, again, turn things back to local issues. Probably should give you a little music here because I'm constantly maligned for not giving adequate musical representation, and I'll look around the studio for something I can throw on the air here. Why don't we do this? I'll play a little interview or two, and then I'm going to come back and read you a speech that I wrote last night. It's actually not a speech. It's a flyer called Council Ducks War, Kennedy Ducks Law, Golder Gets Banned. And it refers to City Council's refusal to address the substantive issues raised at the town hall meeting on Tuesday in the war in Iraq. Council Member Kennedy's ducking of a subpoena, he actually He rushed out the back with a police escort on Tuesday night to avoid a subpoena, which I was delivering from a man named John Golder, who you heard speak at some length on the radio, I think it was on Sunday, possibly it was last Thursday. He is being pursued by the city. They've barred him from coming to any city offices or buildings, including the library. This is the extent of their persecution of this guy. And he went to court yesterday to fight that injunction. Kennedy was one of his witnesses. Kennedy hid from the subpoena and rushed out of counsel early, guarded by Sergeant Butchie Baker. It was quite funny. You can actually read an account of this on www.santacruz.indymedia.org. So check that out. I wrote the story and I posted it, and most of the story that I will probably read later in the show is already on that website, but I've kind of done a recent update. But let's...
One comment.
Go ahead, Jeff.
By the way, Robert, that story really got buried in the media that yesterday 1 million people from around the United States either called, faxed, or emailed every member of the United States Senate and people in the White House. Mike Farrell was a key player in this. And bottom line, it was amazing that 1 million human beings in this country, when it was 10 degrees in Washington, said, hey, we can't walk to Washington today, but we are going to tie up the switchboards of our government. And they succeeded, and the media here buried the story, put it way in the back of the paper.
Yeah, I don't even see it on the Counterpunch website. Maybe it'll be on tomorrow. Let's listen to a little on-the-street chatter, because while the war is important, stopping the war against Iraq is important, and I'm hoping we can start this 24-hour vigil soon. Stopping the war against the poor has always been equally important, and it doesn't get the publicity that the big war gets, but it's the people are suffering anyway. So let's hear some of this.
We're with CJ in the market. He's playing a tune or two, and the farmers. And you're hiding. This is actually you're in the middle of the area where normally the management.
I cheated this time. I have permission.
Oh, now you have. So you're the only
good playing bandit music.
Now you see, this is the only. Apparently, there's only one musician per farmers market allowed. Isn't that right?
They periodically, I guess every Wednesday, have musicians on.
I see you're the only musician here.
I am the only. I got permission, and I'm here. And it works.
There's your permit. Orange alert. There are your papers.
My mommy has it.
There you have it. This is the kind of vicious breed we have in Santa Cruz.
All vicious cycle.
Music here, perhaps?
Huh?
Music?
Let's see. You got me, Robert. Hang on for a second.
All right.
Now the sun is surely sinking down, and the moon is slowly rising. This old world must still be spinning around, and I still love you. So close your eyes, you can close your eyes, it's all right. Now I don't know the love song, I can't sing the blues anymore, but I can sing this song, and you can sing this song when I'm gone. Now it won't be long before another day, and then we're gonna have a good time. Snow and gold to take that time away, and you can stay as long as you like. So close your eyes, you can close your eyes, it's all right.
No, I don't know no love song. I can't sing the blues anymore.
So we're here in front of the Del Mar Theater talking with
Rennick.
And Rennick, you're a man with a nice looking drum and a sign, spare money for pot, question mark. And you're seated leaning against a lamppost, not far from a community service officer's squad car, and a stone's throw from the downtown informant center, which is the host's. Are you new in town?
Yes.
And you know it, so you haven't been hassled. I see that there's a colleague slightly down the way from you, about 6 feet away, with another sign, help us out with some shit. And there's a cup with some coins in it. No hassles from cops.
Well, earlier they hassled us, but not here.
And where were you hassled?
Up the street, about like three or four blocks, something like that.
And what was the nature of the hassle?
Because somebody complained about our friend playing his guitar in the hotel above, and we weren't sitting quite 14 feet from the entrance of a building.
Actually, yeah, you have to be 14 feet to sit down. You can't be seated with a sign. You can't be seated in a group of two if you're spare changing. But ignore what I'm saying unless they come up and tell you, because they have to warn you first.
Oh, okay.
Is that right? Do they have to warn you first? They have to warn you first on the sitting law. They may not have to warn you on the spare changing law. So they may come after you on the spare changing, but they will probably warn you first.
Sounds good.
Of course, it's all horseshit because I don't think you're causing any problems. But you know, look at you. You're not very fashionably dressed. You look rather grubby, and what are these old cords and tennis shoes? Wear something a little more upscale.
No.
Thank you. Now, who is this questionable-looking guitarist? Your name, sir?
Mickey Mouse.
And Mickey, what's your analysis of the Santa Cruz scene?
Kind of sucks.
And why do you say that?
Panhandle sucks.
Well, I notice you have, looks like a good dollar in change in your cap there.
Yeah.
How long has it taken to get that?
All day.
Have you met many intriguing characters with tape recorders and such?
No. Well, yeah, one.
Yeah, there you are. Have you seen police come in and out of the downtown information center?
Not recently, but we haven't been here that long. So
you haven't. Police have not passed by.
Nah.
Prepare for the worst and good luck.
All right.
John Moorer, former street spirit vendor and sometime drug abuser. How's life treating you?
Very well, thank you. A drug abuser.
Well, that's what I hear from certain parties. How is life on the streets in your analysis?
I don't know. I haven't been out here much, so I don't really know.
You're kind of doing a visit? I mean, it's kind of inclement weather today, a little cold.
Yeah, it is a little cold. I hope people have a place to sleep tonight. It's nice and cold, and it looks like it's going to rain, maybe. The weather said it was going to rain even.
Well, luckily, Emily Riley, I'm sure, is taking care of all that. She's our mayor, you know.
Well, I hope she does. But I kind of doubt, is it the armory open? Or
armory is still open, but
still open,
don't know if there are any places or not. We'll find out. You're indoors.
I am indoors. I got a nice heater, nice warm place to sleep, so.
That's good. And any comments for the mob out there beyond the radio?
Well, you might want to get to Housing Authority and get on mod rehab as quick as possible. I've heard rumors that maybe shutting that program out in about 5 years, so.
All you got to do is wait 5 years, huh?
Well, no, I mean, they're closing it out, so I'm not really sure what that means. So you might want to get on it here pretty soon before they do close it out.
I see. Well, thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Reason once you had to die. Don't ever ask me.
Okay, it's about 3:25. We're talking with
Wesley Harrison and Janet Harrison.
Hey, I remember. You guys are up the road a piece. You weren't driven away from there, were you?
No. The police have been rude, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very.
Against the Rittenhouse fence and doing some panhandling. We're one of the few places where it's legal on that side of the street. But you say here in front of Borders, which is where we're now standing, I see only a total of 4 benches all along the area from one end of Borders to the other. And I thought there were more, and you say that there were, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was about 8 of them in here, but they took out 2 more that we've seen this last week and a half, 2 weeks now.
And where were those 2 benches?
They're right in the, right in front of the where it says Books in Front of Borders. So it's been really, like, chaotic. I think the police are, like, chasing everybody away, so.
I mean, you mean one of the, here or down there?
The bench was there.
So was there one bench or?
There was one bench, yes.
So one bench was taken.
One bench was taken there, and another one was taken from up there, so.
Okay, now when was that other one taken from? You're pointing toward the, toward Soquel.
Yeah. It was pulled about there about 2 weeks ago, so.
And let's see if we can find that bench. Did you see it removed, or did you just come back after it was gone?
We came back after it was gone. We saw one removed, and that's where we're standing at right now.
The one in front of the, it's actually directly to the right of the main entrance of Borders on Pacific.
Yes, that's true. Yes. And also, the police have been really in a chaotic chaos, too, out here the last couple of days. So they've been, like, keeping people in line and trying to make people look bad. So just having a rough time here. I mean, we got chased down the street the other day. Me and my friend were just talking and walking around the corner. They flagged us down in the parking garage and made a strip search for nothing. They thought we were drugged.
Probation commission? Condition?
No, I'm on no probation or anything.
Did you tell them you didn't want to be searched?
Yeah, I did, but they made us do it anyway.
Which police officers were they?
The tall lady cop and the short community officer.
Wendy Bynes? Officer Bynes?
Yeah, that's her, yes.
And Officer Gray? Or?
Yeah, that's them, this. Yeah, them too.
Because there's several short community officers, I'm not sure.
Yeah, the one lady officer, real tall lady officer, is kind of the one that had the blue gloves on him and made me and my friend look bad in front of about 1,000 people that day. So.
And what did she say to you? And first of all, what day was this?
It was Monday when it was raining really bad. They chased us into the parking garage, thought we were dealing drugs, and we weren't. So, and they made a strip search and everything else in there. And
what
I think
did
it was
a strip search involve?
Emptying every pocket out of your clothes and out of your jacket, emptying everything out in your wallet, and making you lift your tongue out, and sticking your tongue out, and all this other stuff. I don't know. The laws are really weird here.
Did you say you didn't want to be searched?
Yeah, I said I didn't want to be searched, yeah.
And what was the response? Hang on just a second.
What was being said there? The officers say, well, I guess you don't have a pipe or anybody. Oh, darn it, and they cussed about it, and they got mad because they couldn't bust us that day. They were trying to bust us, so, yeah.
Do you have a record of drug conviction?
No, not anywhere in California or anywhere at all, no.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was trying to figure out why the police are chasing down people that are innocent when you're going to talk with a friend. They chase you down, think you're dealing drugs. They think you're doing this, you think you're doing that. Me and my wife are out here trying to make a living like everybody else, and I think it's wrong.
Were you also strip searched?
No, I wasn't with them at that time. But I'm sick of, like, cops just writing us out tickets and just, I mean, I'm sick of them harassing us, and we haven't done anything.
When was the last ticket you were written?
Got one in the mail.
What was that for?
It was for high risk soliciting.
Highway soliciting. We don't even solicit highways. We only stay here downtown. That's all.
And who wrote you the ticket?
We don't know. My wife's got the ticket in the car. We don't even know who that is.
And do you know the date of the ticket?
23rd of last month.
23rd of February. What were you doing on that date?
We were sitting by our fence over here, downtown, right across from the Palomar Inn. And the next day we had a ticket from the highway. We don't know what from or why. So it makes it really rough.
This is February. It would be 23rd of January.
Yeah, 23rd of January, yes. Yeah.
How about these 2 police officers? How have they treated you?
Well, they're pretty strict, but they're pretty good. I like them 2 police officers. They'll tell you that you're not doing something right.
Officer Gray and who's the other one? Officer... Officer Brandt just passed by, and you have some... I thought you were joking, but you have some positive things to say about Officer Brent?
Yes, I do. He's a really nice guy. At least he'll give you a warning and tell you you have a good day and stay out of the rain and be dry. I mean, he does that for me and my wife a lot lately, so he's been really nice to us.
Has anybody actually driven you into the rain from under the eaves of buildings?
The tall lady officer, yeah.
When was that?
Monday night.
Well, we were soaked. Everybody was pushed out of there. I mean, everybody that was standing out here was pushed into the...
You should have told her that it is illegal to do that. Asked her under what code she was doing it. Now, you know, it's illegal to sit down within 14 feet of a building, but standing is not illegal unless you're blocking the sidewalk. And
right.
No, it's not illegal. And in fact, what you should do is simply say, I think you need to cite me or arrest me.
Yeah.
If somebody's willing to go to jail.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if they do, you'll have to, and they'll say, you're refusing to obey an order? I'll say, no, I simply feel I have a right to be here, and if you wish to arrest me, I'll be happy to go with you. You can write out that ticket, and then we'll take it to court.
Yeah.
Of course, it's easy for me to say, I don't have to go to jail for the fucking weekend or whoever you have to do it for.
Yeah.
But I would suggest that that's, if I'm down here with you, and I got someone to drive my car home, I'll do it with you. Has that happened more than once or just once?
Oh, it's happened before. Like last month, we were in the rain for 2 days, and they pushed us out from under here also. So.
Just borders or other places?
Other places, like Palomar Inn up under the shelter, up in front of Cal Williams, jewelry department. He's kicked me and my wife out of there, standing out 14 feet from the building. He's actually got mean and nasty and told us to get the hell out of the way. The guy that owns the Cal Williams, Dale Williams jewelry store. What's up?
And
Gabe.
Yeah, we've got
the other Gabe.
This is Gabe 2, or perhaps Gabe 1.5.
You're Robert.
I'm Robert.
I've got a question for you, Robert.
Go ahead, Gabe.
If drug money supports terror, what are HMOs?
Tell me.
A budget source for organized terrorists.
Government. All right. Well, what do you get when you cross a penis and a potato?
George Bush.
A dictator.
Yeah, I got it right.
All right, go again. Hit it.
Yeah, all cops are assholes.
Now, would you like to sign that statement, sir?
Yeah, Chris Wilson.
Chris, have you been hassled downtown?
Hell yeah.
When was the last time you got hassled?
About a week ago.
What happened?
I got a ticket for smoking underage, and some lady said that I was hassling her inside Borders when I wasn't even in Borders.
He was with Mom.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was down, like, at the Metro, and while I was walking back here, I went to use the phone, and, some lady cop, the mean one that's always giving out tickets, stopped me inside there, made me hang up my phone, wasted my 50 cents, and gave me a ticket for smoking a cigarette. And then she took my cigarettes, and this she said that if I'm caught in Borders again, I'm going to get arrested, because she said I was hassling and yelling and screaming in there. And I wasn't even there. And then they took my Vicodins the other day, and I have a prescription for those, because I got hit by a car.
Which officers were those?
Ball-headed meanie cop. Yeah,
Officer Brandt?
Yeah. Destro.
So you are not as positive here, Brandt, let's say, as this last couple who just actually spoke rather kindly of Officer Brandt.
He could be cool sometimes, but I don't think he wanted me having Vicodin on me. I had a prescription, so.
Maybe he felt that you were going to sell them to people without prescriptions, like he does.
Now, do you have any evidence that Officer Brandt is, in fact, a Vicodin salesperson?
No, not Vicodin necessarily, but if you're a cop, your original function is to protect the upper class from the lower class, not to enforce the law.
So you are making a deductive rather than an inductive hypothesis.
That's an accurate analogy.
So Officer Brandt is not necessarily a Vicodin salesperson.
No.
Just trying to give Officer Brandt the benefit of the doubt.
Good, dude. You are great because you can look at things from an overall perspective rather than limiting yourself.
I am the all-seeing eye.
Thank you. There you go.
The all-seeing me in this case.
So if the police were originally designed to protect the rich from the poor, as Bobby's were in Britain...
A check.
That's the chess master passing by.
Yeah. But no, seriously, if the cops are designed to protect the rich from the poor, look at every system of hierarchy, right? Including marijuana. The brain... guy who gets pounds, quarter pound, big pound, you know, 10 pounds, 10 pounds, breaks him down to the arm. The arm is the guy who breaks quarter pounds down to the hand. The hand is the street guy. He sells nickels, dimes, and quarters. Look at the government. Cops are the hand.
So the little people are the fingers, and the poor people are the fingernails.
Yeah, the lower class from the pyramid. You know, the hierarchy we developed, the system we established, the pecking order, the totem. Are you at the bottom or the top?
And this is it here. The word from?
Gabe.
On the street here in Santa Cruz. Are you saying you're against the war in Iraq?
Well, I could say, but I know that in my very own opinion, that we didn't go to war. And I think we're going to end up in war because of the stupid pricking in the name of pricking the pricking.
I think you're right. We'll take that again. We're talking with
John Wolfe, you didn't tape any of that.
Not a fucking word. Yeah, we just had a bad tape here. John, Officer Brandt last night, who apparently looks like a certain character in a certain cartoon. I'm not sure what that cartoon is. It's
G.I. Joe Destro. He looks just like him.
Destro, if you will, or Officer Brandt came up to you last night when you were at the Coffee Roasting Company displaying your art to a friend.
Well, actually, the friend was wanting to look through my pieces because he's looking for an illustrator for his book of poetry. Okay, so we were actually talking a legitimate type of business deal in future pretense.
Right.
Okay, no exchange of cash, no talk about cash, no money mentioned at all. And Destro, in question, decided to come up and chew me into an asshole because he said, I seen you 2 days ago walking around with your artwork, and I said, yes, I was. I walk around with it all the time.
Oh,
this is 2 days ago. Don't you have to, like, catch me in the act?
Now here's an observer. What you know? Come on. you say there. Okay.
But anyway, so he literally, you know, chewed me and made me feel like, you know, something above, well, something below what, you know, usually gets squished between the grooves of my boots. And I was like, oh, you know, whatever, dude. I mean, we do have First Amendment rights in the United States.
Theoretically, somewhere over the rainbow.
So basically, all this is going to take is somebody that's willing to push it to a higher court and push it to a higher court and push it to a higher court. Cool. Because hey, you got my vote, man. I haven't gotten a ticket yet, but I expect to get one, and that ticket will violate my probation and put me back in jail.
Yeah. What do you want probation for?
Failure to pay fines from when I was on probation a long time ago.
What was that for?
Sales of marijuana.
So it looks like we have a rather serious criminal here. Where was probation in Santa Cruz?
No, San Francisco. I was put on 3-year probation. I left state for 5 years, came back, and they reinstated my probation for 1 year and 3 months so that I could pay the fines. Basically, they want the money. So, you know, I give them like 10, 20 bucks a month and go up there and actually see them.
Not anymore, you don't. Not off that artwork, sir.
The hell I don't.
All right, well, I'm going to contact Officer Brandt. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We're talking with Claudia. So we're here at the farmer's market, and it's about 15 to 5. We're talking with
Tim Ward.
Tim, something unusual happened to you recently?
A car was parked on Washington Street. My van was parked on Washington Street. Without putting any sort of written notice on it or even chalking the tires, the police took, I assume it was the police, orange spray paint from the tire and over the edge of the tire onto the street on both the front and the rear tire on the street side.
Why do you assume it was the police?
That's generally does parking enforcement.
Do you think this was enforcement or some sort of, dare I say it, graffiti or vandalism? Or have the police become, God help us, vandals?
I can't speak to that one way or the other definitively. But
what was the purpose of these markings?
I assume it was to see if the van had rolled or not, because you could line up the tires to the pavement. It was a way of seeing, they could come back and see if the van was still parked in the same place.
I've heard of Becky Johnson and Tim Rinker being arrested for erasable chalking, and I know the police don't want to violate the law, but wouldn't it be easier to use a chalk mark on your tire?
Yeah, and I've seen them use that in the past. This is the first time I've experienced the paint, which I haven't been able to scrub off the tire, trying pretty hard so far.
That sounds pretty bizarre. When did this happen?
4 nights ago. Today's Wednesday. That makes it, I noticed it on Saturday night.
Wow. Any other hassles, weird points of reference that we can latch onto here?
No, I mean, besides when they come bang on the door and and scream, wake up at you.
When did that last happen?
About a month ago.
Now, does this mean you've been a whole month left alone by the police?
Yeah, but I don't camp in the van that often. I actually camp in the woods most of the time.
Would you like to give us the exact location so we can send some visitors?
To where the van's parked? Or
location in the woods so we can locate and destroy you.
Yeah, I sleep in the trees in the front parking, in the front yard of City Hall.
I see. All right, well, we'll keep that in mind.
Thanks.
Thank you. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Here's an oldie from Phil Oakes and 1965.
It was just a little while ago, I glued my ears to the radio. The announcer was saying we better beware, a crisis was hanging way up in the air. Crawling on the ground, swimming in the sea, and for me. Well, I didn't know if I was for or against it. He was yelling and screaming a mile a minute. Well, he said, here comes the president, but first this word from Pepsodent. Have whiter teeth, have cleaner breath when you're facing nuclear death. And then President John began to speak, and I knew right away he wouldn't be weak. Well, he said he'd seen some missile bases and terrible smiles on Cuban faces. Close picture. Carrying land reform too far. Giving land to the USSR. Well, it said we mustn't be afraid. We're setting up a little blockade. Put our ships along the Cuban shores, and if the Russian bear yells and roars, we'll let him have it. From Turkey and Greece, Formosa and Spain, the peaceful West European plain, from Alaska and Greenland, we'll use our means and 20,000 submarines. We're gonna teach the Russians a lesson. We're trying to upset the balance of power. Now most Americans stood behind the president and his military minds. But me, I stood behind a bar, dreaming of a spaceship getaway car. Head for Mars. Any other planet that has bars like Gertie's Folk City. Yes, it seemed the stand was strong and plain, but some Republicans was a-going insane, and they still are.
Problem. We're only one reason.